Wow. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Wow, that was unbelievable. Where did that come from? Oh. I'm so touched. I'm so touched. That was incredible. I've not been lifted like that in a long time. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Point of light. Wow. Good morning. Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and that's what I want to say this morning. That was it. Every line in that song was perfect for good work. Good work on getting aligned. And then there was this other cute thing that you may not have seen happen. Little baby started to, oh, she dropped her little bear. She got her dog. She got down to pick up her dog, and one of the moms pointed, and she climbed right back up in her chair with her. Wow, is she growing up? It's extraordinary. How exciting. We also love it when she dances too. Though. So, you know, we have no problem with that here. So, wow, I'm so happy that you are all here. It is really an exceptionally amazing day. So many good things going on. Happy autumn. You know, we are in fall. We are full, blazed fully into fall. And the most extraordinary thing is happening in CSL for the month of October. And that is our theme for the month is, I think I would like this theme for forever and ever. I think it falls in great alignment to my vision for us, my ministry, as I lead this community. And that is the idea that this is a time for us to pay attention to this evolutionary awakening that we are a part of. And so we are looking this month for the month of October, more than 100 CSL centers around the world, ministers talking, maybe not right at this same moment, but for their Sunday service, this theme of global transformation occurs as we look at our own personal transformation. So we're going to dive a little deep today. I have some strong words that I want to share, and I'm uplifted and inspired and now a little verklempt as well, as it turns out. That was such beautiful music. And the title of my message this morning is Walk on Water. Wondering where that came from? I'm about to tell you. I write my talk titles. I only do that a couple times a year. So I sit down and I collect about 6 months worth of talk titles. And I look for something new to say. I look for literature to inspire me. I do all my reading and my digging. And then I look for clever names. But I also pay attention to what's going on in the calendar. And what I noticed is happening on the calendar right now, what I knew 6 months ago when I chose this title, was that, well, for one thing, Dr. Ken Gordon and his wife, Dr. Deborah Gordon, will be here in less than a week. Yay! We are celebrating our 40th anniversary of being a chartered church, or currently a center for spiritual living. Originally, this church was named, the Valley Church of Religious Science. Thank you very much, Sue Ritter. That's why you have to sit in the front row. Back me up on these things I might not have written down. And so I knew that was coming, and Dr. Ken will have the pulpit. Don't change that too much, Miss Dana. I got my priorities straight here. And so Dr. Ken will be here, and so he will be our guest speaker next Sunday. So he will be speaking on Saturday evening. We have an amazing event planned, and guess who's coming back to be our music for Saturday evening? Ta-ta! Point of light. And somehow, because we're so blessed and because we work the law, we have Cerise driving out again on Sunday morning to be our music for Sunday morning. Thank you very much. And so I knew I wouldn't have a chance to give this talk that I'm going to do today, next week. And the week after that is, it's our Halloween, and we're going to have some fun with my Halloween message, which is raising hell. Right? So costumes are not mandatory, but you certainly are invited. But what I wanted to do with this message is because right after we raise some hell, we're all going to the polls, right? And so the world is in such chaos right now because of this presidential election, and I'm not going to talk about it. You know I don't do that. However, what I realized was that most of us would be feeling by now that we needed a miracle. Little did I know it would be this interesting. But anyhow, I chose this talk title, Walk on Water, because I wanted to look at that idea. It's sort of one of the most well-known miracles in the Bible, and there are a lot of uses of it. Sometimes we use it in a derogatory way, like, oh, look at him. He thinks he walks on water, you know. But primarily, I want to deliver a message this morning that gives us a very clear understanding of what a miracle is from a metaphysical perspective, from a science of mind perspective, from a new thought perspective, because we do not look at miracles as that sort of divine intervention that falls upon us if we pray hard enough or we go to a faith healer. We do not see life miraculous only with divine intercession, but we have this idea that a miracle occurs every time we have a shift in our thinking, that we have a new view of life. So one of the great things that helps me when I'm going through tumultuous situations is that I will sometimes in my prayer sort of raise my hands and say, God, show me another way of looking at this, because I'm stuck. It really looks like a problem, and I know that my God is bigger than any problem, and so I open myself to that miraculous opportunity to have a change in my vision and the way that I'm seeing things. So I looked in the Charles Fillmore Metaphysical Bible Dictionary, and by the way, that's a great source, but it's a better source if you use the online Metaphysical Dictionary, also put out by Unity Church, which is the Fillmores, of course. And Charles Fillmore says a very similar thing. It's the idea of a miracle is, I mean, well, first of all, isn't it miraculous in the way that we are made that we can change our mind, and that in the changing of our minds, we can redirect the course of our life? Amen. So this philosophy is born of that truth. And this is what Charles Fillmore says. This is how he defines a miracle. A miracle is that which convinces one's unbelieving thoughts, right? So you get some, you kind of get out of your walk of faith a little bit, and then somebody else's beliefs pop in your head because surely they can't be yours. And we have some unbelieving thoughts or some thoughts that kind of argue with the greater truth of our spiritual knowing. When we're clear, we know these things. So he says it convinces our unbelieving thoughts into a change of our view or a change in our belief. And that happens by the result of our own word. Now, when I read that, I thought, this is affirmative prayer. This is spiritual mind treatment. And the way that we teach, there are specific steps to praying and to the way that we chat with God or with that indwelling presence of God to convince ourselves of whatever the desire is that we're looking for change in our life. But he says it happens through the result of our own true words. So our true words are when we're speaking truth, when we're aligned to the divine truth of the entire universe. We think differently. But listen to this. This is the most exciting part of the quotation for me. He ends it by saying, we educate our sight through the word of truth. We educate our sight. In other words, when I'm looking, if I'm in a foul mood and I'm looking out at the world, all I'm going to see is all the foulness in the world. When, however, I'm spiritually grounded and I can stand in my truth with great authority, then everything I see is going to look a lot different. So the truth is, we cannot stand in fear and in faith at the same time. We cannot do both of those. And so we teach, in this teaching, we urge, at the words of our founder, Ernest Holmes, that we choose what it is we're going to put our attention on. We take our focus off of the problem. We begin to imagine what would the solution look like, feel like, be like, smell like, the experience of expressing the health we want, or the unlimited movement of our finances, the goodness in life, the healed relationships, and we put our focus on that instead, and it neutralizes what looks out of sync. So we all know this. I would almost wager, is the baby out of the room? I would almost wager that just about everybody in the room would be able to reflect on a time where you were not thinking clearly and you were seeing things that were really not very pretty to look at. So I learned this myself in a personal way when I was in my early 20s. I only had one or two kids, or I was probably pregnant. I was pregnant a lot. And I remember sitting, and we had just purchased this gorgeous home. It was really little. It probably wasn't much more than 1,000 square feet. Am I off? It was a pretty little home, and it had a little bitty cute kitchen. It was one of those advertised as a cottage. Those of you in real estate understand this, and it had a cute little picket fence. And it was just, I was so happy that we had this home, and it was ours. We were buying it, and it was just cute. And I had houseplants, and I just loved how everything looked when I was in a proper mood. And one night, this was a revelation. This was well before I started studying these types of spiritual truth. But I had a phone call from my husband, who was, at that time, we were young, he was the cable TV guy on call. So he was the guy that went out after dark in the storms and climbed the telephone poles to make sure all of you had TV. And I was never happy about that, you know. I was always like, for God's sake, he's a dad, you know. I don't want to be a widow yet, you know. And he had to be on call this one particular night, and I had had such a glorious day. And there I was with dinner and no husband, and now I'm in a bad mood. And I noticed, and the beauty of this story is that I caught myself having these thoughts. So get that. That's what we teach here. I caught myself going, oh, look at the way the linoleum curls up in that corner. And everywhere I looked, it just looked like the house was in disrepair. And in an instant, I caught myself going down that bad avenue, and I corrected my thinking, you know, and I realized, like, wow, we really do follow if you look at your thoughts, we follow that stuff. We can take ourselves in places we don't need to go. And it was sort of the beginning, maybe I did it all my life, I don't know, but the beginning of my being open to a spiritual philosophy such as this. So when we align to that perfect harmony of truth, that pattern of perfection in the universe that we study about here, what we're doing is we're educating our sight, and then everything we view from that vision looks different. It looks better. So I Googled walk on water. And the first thing that came up, the very first thing that came up was from some religious site. And it said, walk on water, a miraculous act found in the three Gospels of the Bible. That would be Matthew, Mark, and John. And the story goes that the miracle of walking on water occurred on that momentous day where Jesus had stood and preached, done ministry with thousands, with the multitudes, it says in some versions of the Bible. And that was the day where they all got hungry at the end of the day, and so he multiplied the fishes, the two fish and the three or five loaves, whatever it is. We just did that not too long ago here. We did the metaphysical interpretation of that story, but it was that same day. And so now everybody's tired because it had been a big day of doing the work of ministry, and there are the disciples following Jesus and taking care of Jesus. And now the day is ending, and it's starting to get dark, so the disciples go to, they're standing on the Sea of Galilee, and the disciples go to get in this boat because now they have to cross the Sea of Galilee to get to where they need to be tomorrow for the ministry work they're going to do tomorrow in Capernaum. it's got a syllable in there. It's hard for me to say, Capernaum. And they get in the boat, and they get barely away from the shore, and a terrible storm breaks out. Now, it's dark, they're tired, it's scary, and they start to just move into all that fear. This is why I love the music choices you made. Now, if you look at the sort of geography, if we speak geographically about that area where they were, they were sitting on the lower portion of the Jordan Valley. So the Sea of Galilee is in the Jordan Valley, surrounded by mountains. But the Sea of Galilee then is 4,000 feet above sea level. And the interesting thing about that is that then in the evening time, the chill from the mountains comes down while the moist and the warmth from that body of water rises. And what happens when you mix the cold with the warm? You get those sudden storms. So it's not unusual that there could have been a really violent storm that just moved in very quickly. So the story says that here's the disciples, and they're in this boat, and they are totally frightened out of their wits. It's dark, it's scary, it's a really nasty storm, and suddenly they look off into the distance, and they see what they think is an apparition walking toward them. And now they're even more frightened. They think it's certain death for sure. They think they see a ghost. So it's Jesus. He gets close enough. They recognize that it's Jesus. And he says to them, "It is I. Do not be afraid." And so they pull him into the boat. And the instant he gets inside the boat, the sea calms and the storm dissipates. And more than that, the other interesting thing is that then they are immediately on the shore on the other side of the body of water where they need to be for the next day. So I want to talk to you about the symbolism of this story, because that's where we dive deep. When we look at metaphysical interpretation of Scripture, which Mark Reed is doing every Saturday, good pictures, by the way, on Facebook. So we have that. Is that class closed now? Okay, is that an ongoing? They could come at any time then. Look for it in your folder, your program, because this is what we're talking about. How do we look at interpreting these stories in a way that they are personally applicable without the minister telling you what they mean? Oh, it does appear I'm doing that, though, doesn't it? Well, we'll see what I think, and then you get to think what you think. So the symbolism here is that as Jesus walked toward them, that there was this Christ consciousness. You see, that's what we teach, is that Jesus is this fabulous human being who embodied a consciousness that the planet had not had a lot of. I mean, we had this great man Buddha before Jesus walked to the earth. So we had this experience known as compassion, and Jesus came, and then Jesus brought us this idea of love and forgiveness. We have to have compassion before we can really understand love and forgiveness. So it's probably no accident those two great souls walked the earth with slightly different messages in very timely ways. So the symbolism is that the Christ consciousness is always with us, that it's always right in front of us, and that when we align to that, when we recognize that divine truth, then the seas calm, that we find peace, we find that inner peace, and we will arrive wherever we need to be safely. Now, the great relevance here, and this is why that last music really was very, very applicable to this message, the great relevance is that when the disciples were frightened, when they were in fear, they were unable to recognize Jesus. They thought it was a ghost. And the same is true for us, that when we are afraid, when things in our lives are starting to look pretty scary, then fear seems to blind our eyes or distort our vision. Fear and faith cannot abide in the same place at the same time. But the miracle is that we are educated in our sight when we align to that greater truth, when we speak our word, when we speak the word of truth. And that's why prayer can help us to change our mind and get a new perspective. Now, we are, by the way, still fascinated with this idea of walking on water. I read that they are actually making water toys that people can buy. They're probably really expensive, where you can get out and try and walk on water yourself. But this is not new. In the 15th century, there are sketches that were drawn by Leonardo da Vinci, where he had a design for special floats that people could attach to their feet so that they could, in theory, walk on water. So we've been looking at it for a long time, probably based on this reported miracle in the Bible. But here's what scientists have to say about all of this. You know, there are, if you watch National Geographic or this Discovery Channel or any of that stuff, then you may have seen those lizards that run across the top of water. Have you seen that? Well, scientists say that small animals can do that because they don't break the water tension. They don't break the surface tension on the top of the water, and it holds them if they hurry. That's why they have to run really fast. But what I didn't know is there are ducks and geese that also walk on water. And scientists say that that's slightly different, that they have bigger feet. They weigh more. But their feet actually slaps the top of the water, creating a cavity between their webbed foot and the surface of the water. And that cavity of air will hold them for 1/10 of a second. And that's why they too have to go like crazy, really scoot across very quickly, and that it's very much like hydroplaning. We understand hydroplaning, you know, most of us. If you don't, you should. It's helpful here when we have monsoon season. You know, that's when a lot of water comes down in rain, and you're on the road, and the water starts to look glassy. If you stay under 50 miles an hour in your journey, you're more likely to not hydroplane. You simply can't do anything about that idiot that drives around you going 70, though, in the rain. He's the one that will hydroplane. Or she. Might be a girl. Some girls like to go fast, right? Then there's insects. Now, insects also walk on water, but insects have a very different way. Science tells us that insects have these hydrophobic oils in their feet that force the water molecules to move out of the way when they walk on water. And I don't know. See, this all fascinates me. You know, this is where I want to use that word miraculous. Some of these things are miraculous. Some of these things, and when I say that word, I'm thinking of like hard to imagine it's even possible. You know, and yet we live in this gorgeous universe that validates stuff like this all the time. Ralph Waldo Emerson, so long ago, predates Ernest Holmes, said that if we study nature, we can learn to understand God. That as we study the things that are not man-made, we can come to a deeper understanding of those invisible spiritual laws, and we can find ways then to educate our sight, to know the deeper spiritual truths and how to use spiritual law. So I think that if we look at this idea in a metaphysical way of walking on water through the stormy seas of life, we might really be able to apply some of that to the discord that's going on in the world. Yes, I would say uh-oh to that myself. I think that some of this stuff going on in current events, and Facebook just is making me laugh like crazy now. I had to discipline myself not to tell you some of the funny things I read on Facebook last night. I think that we are seeing some ghoulish apparitions. And from a state of mind that is fear-based, it is difficult for us to see the good things that are unfolding, the really amazingly good things that are coming from the conversations we are being called to have with each other now. Not necessarily conversations we want to have, but they are certainly bringing things to the light. Bringing things to the light to be healed on this planet in a greater way than ever before. So this idea that we teach and that we try and live, it says that we have dominion over our minds. That we can choose what it is that we think. That we are indeed transformed in the ways that we are willing to renew our mind. Thank you, Sue Witter, so much. What a great gift. Thank you, a million times thank you. And thank you to so many hard workers getting ready for this anniversary thing. Is Thea here today? Oh, my gosh. Would you just stand up? Would you come up to the middle of the aisle? Give this woman the big, big, giant hand of applause. I have never worked with anybody who works ceaselessly and hard, and there is nothing she can't do. That's right, she says. That's right. I never saw anybody on a ladder so confident and, oh, my gosh, she has a better toolbox than my husband. She's amazing. Thank you, Thea Beach. I can't even tell you all the things she's done for us in the last few weeks. So we are all being invited to look at the ways in which we are moving through the stormy seas of life, not just the stuff in our personal lives, but the way that the global transformation can only happen as we do our own personal work in transforming our lives, taking dominion over our minds. Charles Fillmore said this great, great quote. He said, the faith that we need to walk the stormy sea, to walk through the stormy sea of race thought, takes great faith. The stormy sea of race thought. You know what he's speaking to? Ernest Holmes used that term too, race thought or race consciousness. It's that consciousness of everybody out there, what we're thinking about, we're speaking about it too, but it's not necessarily our opinion. It's not necessarily the highest opinion. It's what everybody's worried about. So it takes faith to walk through this stormy sea of race thought. And faith comes from an understanding of God and humanity. And I'm going to stop there for a minute. It's not an understanding of what God is and what humanity is. It's an understanding of God and humanity as in relationship to each other, one. So it takes great faith to move through that sea of race thought, to understand that oneness and to use the spiritual laws that have been given to us. And that's the invitation today, for us to really intentionally apply and use and have a spiritual practice and apply these skills and these tools in a vibrant way, to be in charge of our own mind, to know that every time we recognize that Christ consciousness or we're able to see the presence of the Christ in another human being, that every time we do that, we align with a mighty power. There can be no apparition in those moments of great, great truth. So that vision is in me and it's in you. We all have it and nobody has it more than anybody else. How about an amen, Miss Cheryl, Reverend Cheryl? Yeah, right. Nobody can have it more than anybody else. It's up to us to open to it. When we are absolutely aligned to that perfect harmony of the universe, there is no storm. And if we should encounter a storm, we just move right through it. And we see that the seas calm as we recognize this incredible way that life is miraculous in our ability to choose. But there's one more thing I wanted to speak to this morning. And that is a little more personal application of the way we can look at all of this as a spiritual community. So last week, the whole message, by the way, you can get all the messages online again. Oh, my goodness, I'm so happy that we're back online and we got our new sound equipment. Thank you, everybody. And I know, right? So, yeah, I know, Point of Light's going, whoa, that's really good, because they did it without sound one Sunday, and you did a good job. But last week I used a Ralph Waldo Emerson quote where he said, vigor is contagious, and we talked about it in great depth. But the part of the quote that I want to revisit is where he said, power resides in the moment of transition from something in the past, a state of being in the past, and into a new state of being. That's where the power resides. And so as we're looking at spiritual community this week, we're wrapping up, so stunning for me to even put my mind around it, we're wrapping up 40 years of this center being a place where people could come and be spiritually fed. We're also living on a planet that is going through some tremendous change. You know, there's something new is emerging, and we can't quite see it and understand it or interpret it yet. But what we know is everything old that is no longer serving us is breaking apart. And that does not have to be bad news, because every time something old breaks apart, something new and beautiful emerges. So, you know, even Ernest Holmes said, nature will not let us stay in one place for very long, because life is about change. You know, you can't survive when things get stagnant. So we have to find that way to move through those logical and certain changes it's the way that life evolves. And so there's sort of a demand on us right now to do things in a new way. And so many people are waking up and paying attention and answering that call. We're all looking to find our own vigor and our own power and to work together and change from our old ways to some new ways and change our view. There is a level of consciousness that is so palpable here in this sanctuary, in this building. I walk in the door. It doesn't matter what I've done that precedes my entrance into this building. And I can feel the peace that is here. I can feel the perfect pattern. I know my truth so much more clearly when I'm standing here. And I realize that, especially right now, we as a community have been devoted to participating in a 40-day project. We counted down the 40 days before Dr. Ken was going to come here, and we're going to celebrate our 40th anniversary. Raise your hand if you're participating in any way in the 40-day project. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I had 40 people sign up on 3 different projects, and the one I am the most proud of, well, I'm pretty happy about all the service you're giving to clean the place up. That makes me pretty happy. But the one I'm the most proud of is that I asked 40 people to pray for 40 days, not only for the well-being of this community, and there is great power when we do things together, but to give thanks for all those people that came before we did. The people that were here 40 years ago and had the vision that something like this would be possible. I asked for 40 people to join me and give thanks every day for those gorgeous souls who did this. Now, what we know about the number 40 is, biblically speaking, it is the end of a generational mentality that brings us to a brand new birth of a brand new mentality. And so I think it's arising in the consciousness, and certainly life is calling for us to do that. But I want to tell you that as I was playing with these ideas in preparing this message, I really started thinking that, do you realize that even just in this building, because this center was not always just in this building. We've been in this building 26 or 27 years now, about that. But since we have been here in this building, I would say that thousands of people have walked through those doors, have blessed us with their presence, have come here for healing, have come here to be inspired, have come here looking for something that gives them hope. In the 40 years that we have been a chartered church, We have had courageous leaders that have dedicated their activities, their decisions, their very lives to the future of this center. And in the same way that we are carrying on and being good stewards so that we can pass it on to those that come after us, there have been science of mind giants that have been here and sat in the very chairs you are sitting in. Leonard and Teddy Minks, I believe he was the first minister, is that correct? Chris is our archive queen now. You have a new title. So we'll have a new title for a board position, archive queen. Dr. Vitura Papke, Ernest Holmes, personal practitioner. Dr. Vitura Papke, who is known in our movement as the teacher of teachers, retired here and came in and sat here, and people sat with her and knew her. And then the Deatons, Jack and Ruth Deaton, who actually have served our organization at the very highest levels, sat in these chairs. Somebody is sitting in, probably lots of us, are sitting in chairs that the Deatons actually sat in. And then June Darby, who was a minister, who actually was the minister when they moved into this building. But the funny story about June Darby is she tried to leave 3 times. They hired her back. She retired and moved away, and then they hired her back. So there were ministers, interim ministers, and other ministers, and all of this will be in your programs on Saturday night. We'll have all the details. Thank you, Chris Lockman, for the gorgeous work you did in pulling it all together. It is possible that there are no founding members, and if there are still founding members that are living, we don't know of them. Am I correct, Chris? Reverend Leonard, who will be here and who was here recently, actually. 40 years is a long time ago. However, there are some key players that are here today that most of you, it's likely, do not even know. And so part of the big reveal that I've been teasing you about for several weeks now, actually, is that I want to introduce you to somebody you need to know, and that would be Alan and Gary Routson. Could I ask you to stand, please? Just stand on up. We're going to acknowledge you. I know it's hard. A lot of people have done great things for our center, but the Routsons, I'm just guessing, have done more than anybody else. And they're very humble, and they don't like anybody to know all the good they do. So I'm not going to rat you out. I'm just going to say they are generous and giving and loving. But what they have really done was way back in the beginning, and we're looking at the 1980s, Alan's name showed up first, I think, before I actually saw Gary's name. They have both been board members. Gary Routson actually was the bookstore manager. Dora, I want a picture of you and Gary before the day is over. And Gary managed our bookstore for years. Alan was always handling the marketing strategies, the looking at the business side of church. He's a very successful business, a man, how do you say that, self-made. Successful businessman, great mentor, and they fell in love with this community a long, long time ago, and Alan led fundraising campaigns, and Alan and a group of others, and I know that Sherman Cohen, we just did his memorial service a couple weeks ago, was a part. Alan, how many people paid off the mortgage? 32? 42 people got together and paid a $600,000 mortgage so that we could be here today. That has to be a vision from a consciousness of someone that could imagine it's possible. And I'm so honored to tell you that our reveal is for the Routsons. And as soon as my talk is done, we're going to tell you what that is. And in the meantime, I want to tell you that there were lots of people like the Routsons. And even here in our community currently, active in our community still, we have John and Dorothy Moore. We have Dean and Joanne Henson. Is Joanne here today? Did Joanne get here? Okay. And the Hensons do something. You know, the Hensons are only here part of the year. They go to Wyoming for like 5 months. Do you know they tithe year round? Isn't that an amazing thing? So these are people who some of you don't even know because the Hensons travel. And, of course, everybody knows John and Dorothy. Dorothy still, my guess is, I don't know this for sure, but I'll bet you still come in and make coffee in the morning. Yep, she does. She does. So we have a lot of people to be grateful for, and we have a lot of Thanksgiving to share together. So I wanted to read you, as I close out this morning, I wanted to read you a quote from Gandhi. Gandhi said, "There is a soul force in the universe which, if we permit it, will flow through us and produce miraculous results." There is a soul force in the universe, and as we open to it, as we become aware of it, it will move through us, and it will produce miraculous results. We are doing holy work here. This is sacred stuff. We are making the way for the future, and as you know, if you have been here on other Sundays with me, I believe with my entire being that we are poised to be a center to receive people who are desiring to personally transform, to make sense of what's going on in the world, and to clear their vision in such a way that we can have more faith and less fear. And we do that in community in a spectacular, spectacular way. It is the soul force of the universe moving through us. And so I would like to just change the tone a little bit and to anchor these words in prayer. So get comfortable right where you're seated. Just feel the love of God surrounding you. Take a nice deep breath. Oh, and I just feel the love of God within me. I recognize it as that activity of life. It is beauty. It is balance. It is that perfect harmony. And that gorgeous connection, the way there is this oneness in the universe, where we cannot be separated from that which is divine. I feel the love of God, and I know that it is that union, that oneness, that way in which we realize that there is a mind of God and there is our mind, and those minds are one together. And we live and move and have our being in pure spirit. I feel the love of God, and I know this is that great truth that has called us together. It is the way we can sit in community and open ourselves to that gem of truth that is ours. It is the way we are awakened to recognize that there is something greater than we are. It is a power and a presence for good. It is right here, right now. It is in this very room. And it is the truth of each individual sitting in a chair. It is the same wisdom and intelligence that is in all of life, in every living thing. And so I stand awakened to this truth, remembering yet again that there is that perfection revealing itself, restoring our wholeness, allowing us to return to the greater truths of life. And so I know that there is healing going on. that anyone who is experiencing any health ailment of any sort is now invigorated by the power of these words, because we know the power that stands behind these words. It is spirit. It is truth. It is light. It is love. It is power. It is joy. And so we are renewed as we continue to open ourselves to just allow God itself to express through us, as us. The Father and I are one. And there is a way that we too can walk on water, the way we can open ourselves to the miracle of a shift in our perception, the way we can recognize the Christ consciousness right in front of us, and we can bless life fully. And so in this very moment, I speak my word of blessing, knowing that any appearances to limitation of any sort are simply that, that there is a greater truth, that there is the abundant nature of this universe, that the givingness of God is the constant pouring out of good and of grace. And so I say thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, Infinite Spirit, for the many, many blessings we receive this day. And in that spirit of deep, deep gratitude, I simply release these words into that divine law that always says yes. I let it be, and together we say,